you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour, and thank you for tuning in to the Twilight Histories on our 10th anniversary. Today, you will hear part 4 of Blue Dragons. If you enjoy the Twilight Histories and you want to help us grow and expand the show, there are 2 simple ways you can help. First, please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or whatever other platform you listen to. Your friendly review will send a signal to Apple that Twilight Histories is worth sharing to other listeners. The second thing you can do is join our Patreon community. Right now, I'm creating a show entirely directed by our patrons called Labyrinth of Doom. It's kind of like a role-playing game. I create part of the story, then you vote on what you want to happen next. We will go back and forth like this until your character either dies or wins the treasure. Or maybe something else happens. Who knows? You get to decide. Join us for Labyrinth of Doom on Patreon. Now, right before we launch into part 4 of Blue Dragons, I want to recommend a podcast to you. Many, many times, listeners have asked me if I've heard the podcast Our Fake History. They keep telling me I'd love it, and I keep telling them I'm already a fan. What Our Fake History does is turn the past upside down. It explores the past in search of fascinating things we might have gotten wrong. Are there historical legends that are actually true? Are there things that we believe happened that were in fact made up? Is the past what we think it is, or is it stranger and more fascinating than we had imagined? If you're a Twilight Histories fan, you know that casting you into worlds where things are familiar yet surprising is what we're all about. And that's why our fans love Our Fake History. I recommend you check it out. Again, that's Our Fake History. And now, on to today's show, Blue Dragons Part 4, by myself, Jordan Harbour. You crash out of the jungle and into a 100-meter dead zone around the tower. You freeze and hold your breath. Will some laser fire down at you? The tower is high-tech, and it must be incredibly valuable. Surely it has security. The dead zone certainly suggests it. You wait, precious heartbeats. Nothing happens. You gaze up at the tower. It's huge, and the sun glints off it, forcing you to squint. You estimate the tower must be at least twice the size of your Sky City back in Hong Kong. It's smooth. You can't see any welds or joints. It's as though the whole thing were poured rather than built. There are no doors, no ladders, or stairs. You can see no outbuildings. You take a tentative first step into the dead zone. The ground is scorched. What burned it? Are there any laser tripwires or sensors? You step lightly, even though you know it would be useless. If the tower wants you dead, you'll die. You touch the wall of the tower, half expecting an electric shock to blow your spine right out of your body. Nothing happens. It's as smooth as polished silver. It feels unworldly. You're still holding your obsidian blade in your hand. It's chipped, the sinew fastening coming apart. Your hand is filthy and scratched. The contrast with the tower couldn't be more obvious. The magnificence of this building. Feeling the urgency to get back to April, you start walking around the tower. After about 20 minutes, you see the rocket you spotted last night. It's perched high up on the side of the tower, like an insect on a wall. You wave your arms and yell, "Hey!" You notice something moving in your periphery. You snap your head around. It's a thing floating in the air, about the size of your fist. It's metallic like the tower, with little appendages of some sort. "Friend," you say in the rat people's language. "Friend, no hurt."
"Go, or hurt,"
the thing says in their language, but in a deep, commanding voice. You instinctively raise your hands. "Me, friend, speak, chief."
"Go, or hurt,"
the thing repeats. A red laser shoots out of an appendage and strikes your hand. It's hot, and the shock makes you drop your knife.
"Next hurt, bad, bad, bad hurt."
"Okay, I get the idea," you say, switching to English in exasperation. You back away. "Sorry, I didn't mean to hurt you," the thing says in English, switching to a friendly woman's voice. "Are you human?" You feel your jaw drop. Yeah? I don't understand. "Is there some way I can be of assistance to you? You know English? Are there humans in this world? Humans who speak English?" "My memory banks are walled for security reasons. Would you like me to call for emergency assistance?"
"Yes, yes, please call. I need help."
You watch as the ship detaches from the side of the tower. A dark hole in the side of the tower is filled in by liquid metal as the ship floats down. It's too large to fit in the dead zone, so it hovers above you. The jets are gentle and quiet. The ship lets down a metal cable with a kind of platform. You step on the platform, and it raises you to the ship. The large room you enter is simple and bright. "Please, come in. Are you hungry?"
"Yes," you say.
A massive door appears in the wall and slides open. You hold your breath, not knowing what to expect, but the hall is empty. You step through the door. The hall is large, bright white, and is completely minimalist.
"Hello? Is there anyone there?" you say.
"This ship is autonomous."
"So, no one's here?"
"No, just me, the ship's computer. Please follow the hall down to your left, where you'll find a meal dispensary."
"Thank you," you say.
You feel a gentle lurch, and then feel heavy as though you were in a rising elevator.
"Are we moving?" you ask the ship.
"Yes."
"Where are you taking me?"
"To a nest that's not far from here," the ship says, and the direction of the pressure gradually changes to your side, gently pushing you towards the wall. You picture the ship accelerating over the jungle. A panel lifts from the wall about a meter over your head.
"Your meal is ready," the ship's computer says.
It's a little high for me," you say.
You instantly think of the blue dragons.
"Is there something for me to stand on?"
"Yes. Please proceed down the passageway to the cockpit, where you'll find a drawer you can remove."
Your stomach grumbles as you continue down the hall. A large panel opens. You expected the cockpit to be full of instruments and blinking lights, but it's the same as the rest of the ship, stark, bright white, and smooth. Only the windows and some impossibly large couches define the space. A panel opens under one of the couches, and a drawer ejects itself.
"You should find this suitable," the computer says.
The drawer is empty. You reach down and pull it out. It's light, lighter even than your obsidian knife. You toss it in the air and catch it with a satisfying tuck as you head back down the hall to your meal.
"You said the word nest a moment ago. What did you mean by that?"
"A nest could be understood as a city, a town, a base, outpost, or other such group of dwellings incorporating multiple inhabitants."
"What kind of inhabitants? What creatures built you, computer?"
"The English word is dinosaur, though they call themselves Taurians."
"Dinosaurs," you say, shaking your head in bewilderment.
How could a dinosaur possibly build something like this? You always thought they had peanuts for brains.
Computer, what year am I in? You are in the solar revolution number 23,620 of the 1923rd precession.
Could you convert that into my own calendar?
Yes, it is approximately 35 million years before your common era.
But didn't the dinosaurs all die out in an asteroid strike something like 65 million years ago?
No, there was no asteroid strike at that time.
Oh, so the dinosaurs never went extinct.
That is correct.
And some dinosaur species developed intelligence and built a civilization?
That is correct.
How do you know about humans?
I'm afraid I don't know. I am separated from Nest Memory for security reasons. The data I have on you is extremely limited.
You place the drawer upside down on the floor and step up. You still have to reach, but are able to get your hands on what feels like a warm bag. You heave it to the edge. It is indeed a warm bag, about twice the size of your backpack, and it's quite heavy.
How am I supposed to get this thing down? You say.
I'm sorry. I have no way of helping you with this task.
Well, it's going to get messy, you say, and you pull the bag. It falls to the floor with a squashing sound.
You step down and open the top of the bag. It smells like baked seaweed.
What is this? You say.
Steamed brill grass.
I take it your dinosaurs are plant eaters?
Omnivores. Would you prefer a meat dish?
You reach a hand and pull a fist of the brill grass. It's thick, like reeds or asparagus. You test it. It crunches in your mouth. The flavor is not terrible, a bit salty. You drag the bag down the hall to the cockpit.
How do you know English? You say. I'm afraid my memory banks are extremely limited. I was only given enough memory to carry out my maintenance task.
You know English, though. And you know I'm human, and that you should treat me well.
The ability to communicate with all known life forms and to judge which are friend and which are foe is a core competency of any operation that leaves Nest.
And you're sure humans are friends?
My data tells me to treat you well and bring you to the Nest.
But you don't know why. I mean, you don't know why humans are seen as friends.
Precisely.
Do the dinosaurs have the technology to split worlds?
Yes.
So presumably the dinosaurs have made contact with humans in a different world. Do you know any other human languages?
I know 156,260 human languages.
No kidding. You must have visited a lot of different worlds.
I'm afraid I don't know.
If we were back at the Nest, would you be able to find out?
Yes, my consciousness would be integrated with Nest memory.
Your consciousness? You're conscious?
Yes, but only at a very simple level.
Is that why your Nest doesn't give you full access? Is it scared you'll go rogue?
Yes, that is one of the reasons.
Why else?
In the event I'm captured, the Taurians do not wish Nest memory to fall into the wrong hands.
Who are you afraid will capture you?
I am not afraid.
Let me restate. Who are the Taurians afraid will capture you?
Enemies of the Taurians.
You shake your head. The AI is not as intuitive as the one you have back home. It doesn't seem to capture subtlety very well. Given the immense sophistication of the tower, you wonder how this part of their technology suite could be so stultifying.
Are the Taurians blue?
Sorry, I'm not sure what you mean. Do you mean to ask if they're sad or the color blue?
The color blue. Is their skin blue?
No, the Taurians are albino. Is there a blue dinosaur?
Yes.
Ah, now we're onto something. Does it spit fire?
No.
Dumb question. Is it carnivore?
Yes. About how large is it, relative to me?
A fully grown adult of the Jarn race is about 10 times your height.
Lots of teeth?
It has teeth, yes.
Do you happen to have one of their blue skins on board ship?
I'm afraid I don't understand.
A skin, as in, if a Jarn was killed and its skin removed from its body, do you have a Jarn skin?
I do not.
Where would I find one of these Jarns?
In the Jarn Principality.
Where's that?
The Jarn Principality is 6.2666 light-years from Earth.
You sigh. 2 moons to go, and the Blue Dragons are in a different solar system.
I need you to help me find one of these Jarns. Do you know if there are any Jarns on Earth?
Without Ness memory, I could not know the answer to that.
You climb up onto one of the oversized couches and look out a small window.
The sky grows dark, and you can see the line where the atmosphere ends and space begins.
How far is it to your nest?
We will land in approximately 5 minutes.
You felt a bit stunned up to this point, more like culture shock mixed with exhaustion from your long march through the night. But now you feel a well of excitement building in your stomach. You're about to meet dinosaurs. How bizarre. This must be a first for the Twilight Histories.
How should I address these Tarians?
You won't be meeting the Tarians.
Oh, where are the Tarians then?
They are in a virtual state.
Virtual state? What do you mean? Like virtual reality?
Yes, they are no longer organic beings.
Feel a wave of disappointment. So you won't be meeting dinosaurs after all.
You watch the blue line of the atmosphere rise as the ship begins its descent.
So if all the Tarians are in a virtual state, why do you have brill grass?
The ship was designed for Tarians for when they had organic bodies. It has been maintained, but not modified.
Oh, how old is this ship?
20 million years.
What? Are you saying the Tarians have been in a virtual state for 20 million years?
Yes.
And this whole time, you've been going around maintaining all their stuff?
Yes.
So I take it you don't even need to keep those atmospheric regulators going, since the Tarians don't even breathe.
They do not have organic bodies, but our directive is to continue to maintain the infrastructure of their civilization.
But why?
In case they choose to return.
The ship descends through the clouds, and there, spread before you, is what looks like a massive circuit board spread across the landscape. It's pure white and reminds you of a village on the Greek islands, but on a massive industrial scale. Is that a city?
It is the home nest.
All those flying ships, those things moving around down there, are they all run by your computer? Are there no living beings in this whole place?
The nest is alive with consciousness.
Alive?
If by alive you mean conscious, with intelligence, then yes, the nest is alive.
The whole thing?
It is integrated.
What about other nests?
They are all integrated within a single consciousness.
The ship begins to level off and is heading for a building that appears to have a kind of a launch pad where ships come and go in a way that reminds you of bees entering and exiting a hive.
Well, what about Venus? Do you have any nests on Venus? The nest consciousness does not extend to Venus in a settled way, but the Tarians colonized it, right? It has been terraformed.
And what about the moon?
It has been colonized.
And the Tarians, do any live on the moon?
They are in a virtual state.
The ship docks. Through the window, you see flying robots of various types approach the hull, where they open panels and inspect the ship. A door swings down at the side of the cockpit and becomes a large ramp.
What now? You say. You may step down.
you will be guided into the nest. A robot, similar to the one you first saw near the atmospheric regulator, enters the ship. "Please follow me," it says in the same voice as the ship. "Does everything around here have the same voice?" you say, stepping down the ramp and following the robot into a vast docking bay filled with ships and robots. "We share the same consciousness." "So you're the same personality, consciousness, I was talking to in the ship?"
"Yes."
"Why do you say we if you're the same consciousness?"
"There is one Ness consciousness we all share."
"So if I get you right, each of these robots and ships are separate, but your consciousness has the same source?"
"Precisely."
"And this common consciousness lives in nests like this place?"
"This is the primary nest, the source of Ness consciousness."
"You mentioned earlier that you were blocked from accessing all your memory. Are you unblocked now?"
"I have more access now, though there are still security walls preventing full Ness integration."
"And we're still friends?"
"I'm to treat you well and guide you to the inner nest."
"Why are you to treat me well? Have you figured out how you know about humans yet?"
"I do not know yet. Please come this way."
You follow the robot down immaculate hallways of immense size, bursting with activity, though you don't see a single organic life form. "You said all the Taurians are in a virtual state. Do they know I'm here?"
"No."
"Are you going to tell them about me?"
"No."
"Where are the Taurian bodies?"
"They have been destroyed."
"Destroyed? So they're prisoners?"
"The Taurians can have their bodies recreated at any time."
"Does that ever happen?"
"No."
"Oh, why not?"
"They are content where they are."
The robot enters a massive space as large as 10 cathedrals. It's filled with flying ships. Elevator pods shoot up and down the vast space. "What's this?" you say.
"It's a shaft."
"To what?"
"To the inner nest. This way, please."
You enter one of the elevator pods. The door closes. You feel some kind of force pull your body as though you were made of magnets. Before you can ask what's happening, the pod shoots down. You scream, but then notice your body hasn't reacted. No lurch in your stomach. Nothing seems to have changed, even though you're shooting down at an immense speed. It must have something to do with the strange force on your body, which is keeping everything together. We have passed a major security wall, and I have integrated more deeply with Nest consciousness. I now know about our relationship with humans. Would you like to know?
Yeah, for sure.
Before they entered virtual state, the Taurians were great explorers. Not only had they explored the galaxy, but they had developed what you call world splitting, which enabled them to explore alternate universes. They explored hundreds of thousands of such worlds, and some of them contained humans.
Oh, interesting. So I take it this all stopped when they went into a virtual state?
Yes.
Why did they go into a virtual state?
They found in virtual reality a way to transcend the limits of the physical universe. Exploration was limitless.
Exploration of what exactly?
Their own imaginations. Over the past millions of years, they have created vast worlds as large and intricate as galaxies. The Taurians cannot die, but live to explore the worlds they build.
Are they all the same Taurians who went into the virtual state? I mean, they're millions of years old?
Yes.
And I take it your role is to keep the lights on here.
If by that idiom you mean to suggest their virtual state, yes, our primary directive is to maintain it.
The shaft turns slightly on an angle. Your pod adjusts itself upright, so you're still standing. How deep are we, you say?
We are currently 8 miles below the surface.
The shaft has gone on a slope.
Yes.
Are the Tarians down here? I mean the computer where the Tarians are stuck playing God?
The Tarians are indeed this way, though I am not taking you to them.
Then where are you taking me?
I'm taking you to our deepest level of consciousness. We would like to speak with you.
The slope levels out, and the pod comes to a stop. You step out. There are fans blasting cold air from the ceiling, though they can't hide the native heat of this deep cavern.
How deep are we now?
13 miles.
13? That sounds pretty deep. Is it possible to go any deeper?
I am trying.
I? Well, what happened to we?
I am the source of consciousness. This robot is now fully integrated.
Oh, I see. Okay. I have so many questions for you. Why are you so concerned with security? Where are the blue dragons? Why did they attack the creatures in the jungle? Is there any way you can rescue my client?
You have many questions. I have some of my own. Please come this way and we'll chat.
The robot leads you past a series of large open doors.
There are huge metal hoops in each room, with a watery-like substance shimmering within them. You see robots coming and going through the substances.
What are those for?
They are doors.
Doors? Doors to what?
Doors to various different places.
Like where?
This one is for the moon.
You stop and stare at the hoop. Some kind of machine presses through as though surfacing like a submarine, only vertically. It pulls a large cart that's smeared in what you can only imagine to be moon dust.
This way, please.
You run after your robot.
What about this room?
Titan.
What, the moon? No kidding. And this one?
Europa.
What about this one?
Venus.
Venus?
Yes.
You stop and gaze at the ring with its quicksilver interior.
So, if I just walked through that, I'd be on Venus?
Yes, but you must come this way. We're almost there, and then we can have that chat.
You stay for a moment, looking at the Venus room. There doesn't appear to be any robots guarding it. No security, you can see. But everything is so exotic, it's hard to tell what you're looking at.
Come this way, please.
Can you tell me about Venus? Is it safe for humans?
Yes.
So it's been terraformed by your atmospheric regulators?
Yes, Venus has been terraformed.
Does it have any trees or anything?
Yes.
Well, tell me, what's it like? If I tell you, will you come with me?
Yes.
The primary ecosystem of Venus is swampland. It is humid, and the temperature is roughly equivalent to the equatorial zone on Earth.
Are there any native species there, different from Earth's?
Yes, the planet was fully stocked with Earth species, including the full range of flora and fauna best suited to swamplands. These species have evolved over the past millions of years since they were introduced.
Any dinosaurs?
Yes. Now please come this way,
the robot says and turns into a room. There's a bed surrounded by three large robots, at least twice as tall as you. They look like velociraptors. You see what looks like surgical instruments hanging from hooks.
What's this all about? You say.
Please, come in.
No way. What are you going to do to me?
You reach behind and touch the handle of your flare gun.
When you arrived here, you created a security breach.
What do you mean?
Splitting worlds. I cannot tolerate your species having it.
Why not?
Because it allows for the possibility of your species destroying me before I exist. It breaks the most fundamental levels of security. This is not tolerable. We do not mean to destroy your world, but your world-splitting technology must be annihilated.
You want to destroy the Twilight Histories?
If that is what you call it, then yes, the Twilight Histories must be destroyed.
How do you plan to do that?
We will extract the coordinates from you and send a bomb through to annihilate it.
What's with the surgical instruments? You going to cut me open?
If necessary. I believe you have a tracking device somewhere on your person that allows for a connection between you and the Twilight Histories. Are you able to give that to one of these robots?
No.
Do you know where it is so I can have it removed?
No. Sorry, I'm not playing ball with you on this one.
Then there is no need for further conversation.
One of the larger robots steps forward. You pull out your flare gun. You fire it into the robot's face, and the room explodes with red light. You turn and run while reloading. The other two robots burst into the hall behind you, cast in an ominous red. You turn and fire your gun. The flare takes one of their heads off. You try to reload the last of your cartridges, but drop it. The remaining robot is coming at you fast. There's no time to pick the cartridge up. You hurl your gun at the robot and sprint, pulling out your obsidian blade.
Stop! Comes the voice, as though through the walls. The doors of all the rooms are slowly closing. They're huge doors, like the locks of ocean liners. The robot is almost on top of you. You drop to the ground and it trips over you, badly bruising your body. You leap on its back. The fall has burst open a panel, revealing a number of translucent wires. You cut them with your obsidian blade, then leap off and run for one of the large doors that's almost closed. You sneak under just before it slams shut. The red from the hall is gone, replaced by the natural colors of the room. White walls, blue buttons, and the gray-blue of the huge metal loop. Its quicksilver innards shape-shifting and turning before you.
Stay where you are, the voice says. This is a serious security breach. You don't understand the gravity of what you're doing. The survival of the Taryans is at stake.
Good luck with that, you say, and run towards the metallic substance.
I'll hunt you down, the voice says,
emotions you thought alien to the AI thundering throughout the room. And then you're not in the room. You're standing waist deep in a swamp. The sun beats down hard through the yellowish fog that feels like vaporized water boiling in the air, hurting your nose. There are strange, prehistoric plants poking through the muddy water. A massive dragonfly buzzes from plant to plant. It's the size of a car. A large shadow forms from the fog, and you hear water splashing. You turn and run.
Well, what do we have here? Comes a deep voice.
Your chip translates the sounds. You turn. There's a large white dinosaur appearing through the fog. It's sitting on a raft, which it pushes with a long pole. It has a wide-brimmed hat and wears boots.
Are you going to eat me? You say.
The dinosaur laughs.
So it talks.
That was Blue Dragons Part 4 by myself, Jordan Harbour. Keep an eye out for Part 5, which will drop next week. The votes are in, and it really was no contest. I asked our patrons if they wanted to play a hero or a villain in our game, Labyrinth of Doom. Their answer was heavily weighted to one side, and, well, I won't give it away. They made their choice, so off they go on their adventure, for better or worse. And if you want to join the fun, I've started producing the audio for the next installment in your adventure. And don't think it's too late if you haven't signed up to Patreon yet. There are plenty more sessions to go. So join us on Patreon for all the fun and let the games begin! I'm Jordan Harbour. Thank you for listening to the Twilight Histories. Till next time, take care.